welcome to another episode of the Stumbled Upon podcast. I'm your host, Kate, and each week we'll be taking a deep dive into a new topic that has sparked my interest. I hope that you all are having a wonderful Friday, and I hope that you had a good week, but even if you didn't, I am glad that you're here. And this week we are going to be diving into the topic of Mardi Gras. Now, I have spent some time in Louisiana. I actually lived there for about 5 years, and so I did sort of experience the holiday firsthand, although I did experience it from an outsider's perspective. I didn't really understand how deep it ran culturally until moving there and, like I said, experiencing it for the first time. And a friend of mine actually suggested that I go into it this week because it is coming up on Tuesday. And so I thought, why not? This would be something interesting to do a deep dive on and get a little bit better of an understanding about. So where did it come from? Similarly to our episode about St. Valentine's Day, people are not 100% sure where the holiday specifically originated. There are a few different ideas. The first, of course, being that it was originally a pagan festival for springtime that was converted when the church started melding pagan rituals and celebrations with their own Christian holidays. The traditions that sort of were called out are a couple of Roman traditions as well as a Celtic tradition. So for the Roman side of the house, you have Lupercalia, which we already talked about in the Valentine's Day episode, and then Floralia, which is another springtime festival. And then the Celtic celebration of Imbolc was another one that was called out as possibly being the reference point for Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras is both a day and a season, so you kind of have to differentiate what you're talking about when you are talking about it. Other scholars think that it may come from a much older Indo-European spring festival or possibly the folklore of Germanic and Slavic people rather than the Romans. So again, we're not really sure specifically where it comes from. There are several different ideas, and I don't think we'll ever really know the answer to it. And honestly, I don't know that it really matters in the grand scheme of things. Anyway, and then the last sort of idea is that it may just have solely been the result of the Catholic Church's discouragement of sex and meat during Lent. So sort of like the last hurrah, if you will, before you go into that season of fasting and being very stoic and getting prepared for the Easter holiday. So what is Mardi Gras? Technically, it refers to Fat Tuesday. So Mardi is French for Tuesday and Gras is French for fat. So it's literally Fat Tuesday. It is the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday, which is the start of the Lent season, which is, for those of you who are unfamiliar, a Christian holiday that is celebrated by several different faiths within Christianity. I think maybe the most widely recognized is Catholicism, but there are several others that also celebrate Lent, and they all celebrate it a little bit differently. But for the purposes of today's podcast and deep dive, the articles that I was reading only discussed the Catholic Church specifically. And I think this more has to do with the fact that the time period that we're talking about was not the reign of the Catholic Church, but the time period when it was the main Christian religion was Catholicism, if that makes sense, kind of what we're talking about here in the timeline of events. And actually, maybe we should do like a whole religion deep dive and just talk about where they all stemmed from, because that's actually really interesting. I watched a video on TikTok, I believe. There's a TikToker who talks about Christianity, I think, and deconstructing some of the myths surrounding Christianity. And it's really interesting to learn about where religion comes from and kind of how a lot of the religions are based on essentially the same thing, but using different words and somehow still hate each other, even though they're all talking about sort of the same thing. I don't know. Maybe we'll go into it. I'm sure that you could argue both points or both sides or all the sides. Either way, maybe we'll talk about it. I don't know. Anyway, getting back on track. So Mardi Gras as a season is known as Carnival elsewhere in the world. And it starts on Three Kings Day, which is January the 6th, which is the 12th day of Christmas. And it ends on Fat Tuesday. So the season Mardi Gras slash Carnival runs from January 6th until whatever day is Fat Tuesday. Fat Tuesday moves moves because Easter moves. So it's not always on the same day necessarily every year, but it's like 40-ish days before Easter. So the name Fat Tuesday comes from the tradition of feasting on all of the rich fatty foods that people had on hand, like meat, eggs, cheese, butter, lard, etc., before giving it up for Lent. During this time period, the Catholic Church was way more strict on what you were supposed to give up during Lent, and it included meat and all of its byproducts. So basically, they used Fat Tuesday as a final celebration before this season of giving these things up. And it also served the purpose of getting rid of the supplies. You know, they didn't want to be wasteful either. So let's use up all of our fatty rich foods and just binge on them. You know what I mean? Now, when Mardi Gras came to America, it is believed that the first Mardi Gras was on March the 3rd of 1699, when two French Canadian explorers were camping about 60 miles downriver from present day New Orleans. They knew that it was Fat Tuesday back in France, and so they held a gala where they were camping. And then French soldiers and settlers continued the tradition of holding feasts and wearing masks moving forward. Now, there is some low stakes drama regarding the first Mardi Gras, which I think is funny, and I'm sure some people take it incredibly seriously, and I'm not trying to be like flippant, but also at the same time, like, it's not really that big of a deal, honestly, in the grand scheme of things. It's really probably not, but it's interesting nevertheless. The festival, the first Mardi Gras, if you'll remember, was held 60 miles downriver from New Orleans, which would put it in present day Mobile, Alabama. So that city actually celebrates Mardi Gras in the context of them having the oldest Mardi Gras celebration in the entire country. And I know, at least from an outsider's perspective, we all think of New Orleans when we think of Mardi Gras, and they're sort of the maybe cultural reference point for the celebration. But it is interesting to note that they technically did not have the first Mardi Gras in Louisiana. Mardi Gras was celebrated in New Orleans soon after the city was founded in 1780. But the first parade was not held until 1837. So I was wondering when I was doing my research why there was such a huge gap between the first celebration and then the first parade. And it led me down sort of a path of interesting world history. And I didn't do a super, super deep dive into it because I would have gone way off onto a way huge tangent, but I did do a little bit of a deep dive of it. So the gap is a result of the Spanish taking control of New Orleans and banning the festival. This happened in 1762 when France gave up control of Louisiana to Spain to pay off their war debt, which is just that fact in and of itself. If you just think of it nowadays, it is so, I remember learning about, you know, the different world powers that quote unquote owned different parts of North America and in history. And it was just kind of like, yeah, so this country owned it for a little while, and then this other country took over, and then this other country had this part, and then they just kind of like swapped it around and beep, bop, boop. Now we have the United States. Now, as an adult who maybe has a little bit more information, a little bit more historical context, and a little bit more cultural reference, I'm like, wait a minute. So land that you didn't own. Or that wasn't yours, really, to begin with. You're just like, hey. So I owe you, meaning France. France is like, hey, so we have this land over here, and it's ours, even though people lived here before we got here, and we didn't discover it because it already existed and people already lived here, but that's another topic for another day. France was like, hey, Spain, we owe you a bunch of money because of the war, so how about you take this cool little territory that we own? And Spain was like, hell yeah. And so they took over, and they were like, we don't like these traditions that you guys are celebrating though, so you're not allowed to do it no more. And everyone was just supposed to like fall in line and stop celebrating their culture. Like, it's just it's crazy to think about it now. And then in 1802, Spain gave it back to France for just a little while. And then in 1803, the United States purchased Louisiana from France for $15 million. And I did look up what that would be in today's money, and it equates to roughly $340 to $371 million in today's money. So that's how much the United States spent to own the state of Louisiana, or the territory of Louisiana. And actually, if I'm remembering correctly, in my high school history, AP history brain, I think the Louisiana Purchase included more than just the state of Louisiana, but I could be completely wrong on that. Okay, so I just looked it up, and according to Google's AI overview, because I'm lazy, the Louisiana Purchase included land that became the states of Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Missouri, Nebraska, Oklahoma, North Dakota, and South Dakota. It also included parts of Colorado, Minnesota, Montana, New Mexico, Texas, and Wyoming. So it was pretty big, actually. It was not just the state of Louisiana. It's basically like the middle third of the United States if you're looking at a map. So that's kind of interesting. The purchase stretched from the Mississippi River to the Rocky Mountains and from the Gulf of Mexico to the Canadian border. There we go. Interesting. So that's what was included for $340-ish million in today's money, which is a lot, actually. So then moving on from that, the bans that Spain had implemented on Mardi Gras remained in force until Louisiana became a U.S. state in 1812. So that is when they finally were allowed to celebrate this part of their culture again, which is really interesting, and it includes a lot of different traditions. I did not look into all of the traditions because the list is fairly long, but I did kind of go into some of the traditions that I found the most interesting, especially as somebody who, again, I was on the outside looking into the festivals when I moved to Louisiana. And it's really interesting when you move there from elsewhere in the country and you see how big of a deal it is in Louisiana, because it's really not celebrated like that too heavily in the rest of the United States. There's a lot of nuance to the celebrations that you don't really get as an outsider until you're participating in the festivals. And I think that may translate as a good lesson to the way that we view other cultures and other traditions and things that maybe we're not familiar with. Not that you have to participate in everything or be a part of everything, because that's not necessarily what I'm advocating, but just understanding that your understanding of a cultural tradition from the outside looking in may not necessarily be all that there is to it. Do you know what I mean? When you're looking at what other people do, maybe just remember that or something. I don't know. Maybe it's not that deep. I don't know. So anyway, the crews are a part of the tradition that I find really interesting, and they are private social clubs that put on parades and balls during the season, and it is intense. So to be selected to the court, so each crew has a court, and to be selected into the court of a crew is a huge deal, and then to be invited to the balls and such is also a big deal. Like, they're not just anybody can go. Anybody can go to the parades, though, so that's open to whoever wants to participate. But then they all have their own themes and specialty beads, which we'll get into in a little bit, that they throw during their parades that are really interesting and also really fun to participate in and hopefully get during the parades. Their floats and their costumes and that kind of thing will be tailored to what the theme is, and it's really cool to see and participate. And I encourage anyone who's never been to a Louisiana parade, you can go anywhere for Mardi Gras season. So even if it's not New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Shreveport-Bossier all have parades, and it's really fun. So I would encourage you to participate in a parade if you ever get the chance or the itch to go see it and check it out. So getting back to crews, they started in 1857 with a secret society of New Orleans businessmen called the Mystic Crew of Comus. And I may be mispronouncing that. I looked it up and I tried my best, so don't come for me. They held their own parade, allegedly to give some order to the drunken chaos that Mardi Gras had become. So Mardi Gras kind of was starting to get wild and violent, and so this group of men decided to form a crew and put on their own parade, and it sort of gave some looser regulation to the whole event to get people to maybe calm down a little bit. These early societies were exclusively white males, so women and African Americans formed their own crews. And it wasn't until 1992, which I found really interesting that we are now so far into the future, that the New Orleans City Council passed an ordinance that prohibited crews from discriminating based on race, religion, sexual orientation, or national origin. And some of the crews would not agree to this integration, and so they just stopped parading, which is just wild to me. Like, it's just crazy to me that they were so hellbent on not integrating that they were like, you know what, then we're just not going to do it. And it just feels very, like, childish tantrumy to me, but, you know, whatever. People are people, right? So anyway, moving on, throws, which are obviously what they throw during the parades, are potentially started as a joke. A carnival king threw fake strands of gems and rings to his quote-unquote loyal subjects sometime in the 1890s. This came from an article that I read by an anthropologist who has studied the parades and the different aspects about Mardi Gras, the beads being the major one. And it was actually a really interesting read. So I have all of my sources in the description, and if you're ever interested in looking at what I was looking at, you can go there. But I thought this article was really kind of interesting how deep she goes into beads and where they come from and the tradition and all sort of the anthropology that kind of goes around beads and how we interact with them. One of the things that she said in the article was that we don't really know why they became so popular, but it could be because of the human need to go after shiny things, which I thought was funny. Crews then started regularly throwing glass beads until the 1960s and 70s when they moved to plastic. And at first, the plastic beads were not popular, but then they started making them look more like the old glass beads. And then that's when people really started coveting them and wanting to collect them. Now, the colors purple, green, and gold that are attributed to the Mardi Gras festival and season actually come from the crew of Rex, which is one of the older crews that participates in Mardi Gras. They adopted them in 1872 for their beads. And then in later years, the colors got assigned their meanings. So purple was given the meaning of justice, green was given faith, and gold was given power. And those meanings have followed those colors through to today's celebration of Mardi Gras. Other items that are also popular to throw are specialty beads. So like I said, each crew will have their own special beads that they make specifically for their parade in that specific year around whatever their theme is. And then there's also just different like special beads that you can get. And then of course, there's just like the dollar store beads that they throw as well. They'll also throw small toys and snack cakes. And then the other thing that's really popular are Zulu coconuts. And I did kind of little baby deep dive into the Zulu coconuts. And they are hand decorated and given out by the Zulu Social Aid and Pleasure Club, which is one of the oldest traditionally African American crews in New Orleans. And this tradition started in 1910 when they handed out coconuts. So they started throwing them to the crowd, like tossing them to the crowd. And then as they kept going, they started making them more and more elaborately decorated. And nowadays they just hand them out because of lawsuits and stuff like that. But it's actually really interesting. That's one of the more coveted items that you can get during Mardi Gras is one of these coconuts, which I thought was cool. And then the other tradition that I looked into was king cake. So if you're not familiar, it is a ring of dough that today is a braided Danish pastry that is then iced and then it's colored purple, gold, and green for Mardi Gras. And they are sold everywhere during Mardi Gras season. And they're only available during Mardi Gras season. So from January to about March is when you can get them. And they're actually pretty good. They think that it began in the Middle Ages to celebrate the tradition of the three kings who brought their gifts to baby Jesus on the 12th night of Christmas, which is also known as Three Kings Day, which is now the start of Mardi Gras. See how this all kind of circles around to the same themes. It's believed that the French brought the king cake tradition to New Orleans in 1870, and it has just continued from that point forward. According to legend, sometime in the late 19th century, the 12th Night Revelers hosted the first Mardi Gras ball of the season, and they hid a bean, which was later replaced by a pecan or a jeweled ring, inside the cake. And then whoever found the treasure was crowned either the king or the queen of the ball for that celebration. Later in the 1940s, McKenzie's, which is one of New Orleans' largest commercial bakeries, started putting a small porcelain baby into the cake to represent Jesus. And the tradition was that whoever found the baby either had to buy the next cake or host the next party. Today, the babies are made out of plastic and they don't bake them into the cakes. They just come with the cake. And then when you buy it, you're supposed to hide it yourself, again, because of lawsuits, which is kind of lame. You know, but I at the same time, I guess it makes sense. Like, nobody wants to crack a tooth on a baby Jesus in their cake, right? That makes sense. But also, like, if you're buying a king cake and you know there's a potential to be a piece of plastic in it, maybe eat it with more caution. I don't know. Like, common sense, people. But anyway, I personally would rather be crowned a queen than have to buy a cake for next year. So I like that tradition better. So I think for me personally, if we could bring the tradition of becoming a queen back, I would really appreciate that. Thank you so much. So in conclusion to all of that, being from outside Louisiana culture, I didn't really understand why Mardi Gras was such a big deal. And I found it strange that it was a state holiday when I first moved to Louisiana. But after doing my research, I can see a glimpse into the long and fascinating history of Mardi Gras and why it's so important to people. And it makes me understand the holiday a little bit more. And it gives me a better appreciation for it. So I think I would encourage you to do some deep dives of your own into maybe some different traditions that you've heard about but don't understand, or maybe just get a different perspective. I think that it's important that we hang on to our cultural traditions and celebrate where we've come from, but I also think it's important to learn about traditions that are not necessarily your own culture's traditions. I think understanding why other people do the things that they do and where it comes from, even if it's something as simple as Mardi Gras and a celebration, it gives you a glimpse into what it's like for other people. And I think it helps foster maybe an understanding of others that maybe you wouldn't otherwise have. So just some food for thought. Again, I feel like I keep ending these episodes with these like really deep conclusions. And sometimes it's just not that deep. And I recognize that. Like, I get that for sure. But also, you know, you could argue the other way too, I think. I don't know. Anyway, that's Mardi Gras. So yay. If you ever have a chance to go to New Orleans or anywhere in Louisiana for that matter during Mardi Gras season, I would encourage you to do so. And if you have any other topics that you would be interested in me doing a deep dive on, or you yourself know a bit about and would like to give me more information on, you can always reach out at stumbledpod@gmail.com. Drop me a line. Otherwise, thank you so much for being here with me today. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day and have a great weekend, and I will see you next Friday.